about 30 seconds. Good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, December 10th, 2013, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you again. I trust everybody is staying warm as we enjoy this nice Iowa December. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anyone wishing to address the board about an item on today's agenda? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes. This is for the December 3rd meeting.
Move on.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any corrections or clarifications? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Next item is consideration of personnel actions. All items as listed, board.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda, board, please add utility permit number 1432.
That it?
That's it.
Okay, move approval with noted changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Next, a couple recognitions here, well-earned recognitions. First one, Keith Morgan. Keith, come on up. Keith has been recognized by the Iowa Emergency Management Association, recognition that he's a demonstrated level of achievement that marks him as an Iowa certified emergency management coordinator. Keith's done a great job for us. Please join me in congratulating Keith on this honor.
All right. Very good. You mean all this time you didn't have the credentials, you were just faking it? Yes, you did very well. Congratulations.
Next, we need to recognize a couple members of our Planning and Zoning Commission who are departing. First, not able to be with us today is Daryl Veggie. He's had 5 years of service on the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we are really, really appreciative of his service. I know he was chair for at least the last little bit of his, so thank you, Daryl. And then Stephen Gass, 10 years of service on the Planning and Zoning Commission, and we're going to miss you. Steve, come on up, please.
Up, Steve. Yep.
Or let's go around here and get a picture with Steve since this is.
I don't know. I'm working on part of my tux. We're
used to. That's yours, and then you hopefully can find a nice place.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to have been on the commission. It was an interesting time. I want to particularly thank the board for listening to many of the recommendations that we put forward to you and for communicating back to us when we were a little bit off base or not in line with your wishes. You've done a great job in supporting planning and accounting. And as new mayor of Maxwell, I hope you will continue to work well with you.
Great.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Leanne, what did you want to add?
I just have a few facts and figures because I know Steve likes those.
Steve?
Don't leave yet. Got a few facts and figures.
Here's for you. As Mr. Sanders said, over 10 years, Steve attended 90-plus meetings. If you assume each meeting lasted on average 1.25 hours, which is not always true, we've had some that went to like 2 a.m. This is over 113.75 meeting hours during a period of about 10 hours each year, volunteer hours strictly. Also, I know Steve came to each meeting very well prepared, assuming 1 to 2 hours for each meeting, so there's another 15 more hours annually. But I do want to say he served as both chair and vice chair throughout that 10-year period and has been known as the motion maker. And with that, well over 150 motions were made by Mr. Gast in the past 10 years and a handful of seconds, about 50 seconds, so that he kept the things moving. We are going to miss you. You were very well prepared, as I said, always for every meeting. And on staff, kept us on our toes, questioned us and many times when we needed to be, take a step back and look at something from a different light, too. So I will miss you. And congratulations.
Yeah, our loss is Maxwell's gain. Good luck and let us know what we can do in support.
Good.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Next is agency reports, emergency management departmental report. Good morning again, Keith.
Good morning, sir. Okay, sir, we'll start off with mitigation. Story County multi-hazard, multi-jurisdictional plan was approved by Iowa Homeland Security on September 11th without any request for corrections. It was forwarded to FEMA Region 7, and on November 12th, we received two minor requests for changes to the hazard mitigation strategies of two of our communities. These communities have since provided us those corrections, and we have forwarded those corrections on down to FEMA, and we're hoping to have the plan approved, awaiting adoption by mid-January. Under the planning realm, emergency management is revising emergency support function, ESF 6, mass care, which includes activities like evacuations, sheltering, feeding, human services, and housing. We are reaching out to our major volunteer organizations like the Salvation Army and the Red Cross to help us build a plan that meets the needs of our communities quickly in a cost-effective manner. Executing these elements of mass care really reflects the need for whole community response concept because it involves first responders, community leaders like you, Story County agencies like community services, and our volunteer organizations who must all come together to meet the needs of our citizens. Our office has also been working with DuPont, who has been a proactive partner with us, Nevada, and other communities to plan for the ethanol production activities that will be starting here in Story County. They have provided information to local first responders on their corn stover collection and storage procedures, and they asked for our inputs on potential corn stover storage sites. We will also be meeting with DuPont representatives and Nevada first responders to discuss safety issues associated with their operations. Our office spent some time with Story County Medical Examiner Dr. Weider to discuss mass casualty contingency planning and how the new resources his office received can be integrated into a mass casualty, mass fatality response. The extra manpower in his office will greatly enhance his ability to execute his responsibilities to properly collect evidence, identify victims, and help provide closure to the relatives of these victims. We will be working with Dr. Weider to identify funding sources to equip his personnel with the communications equipment they'll need to integrate with the on-scene disaster operations. I have been participating in a panel of the Iowa Homeland Security personnel and emergency managers to conduct the first of its kind comprehensive capabilities assessment. Previously, local emergency managers were not asked to provide inputs into this assessment, and the inclusion of our perspective should help to provide a more realistic view of capabilities across the full spectrum of emergency management activities. We've also been working with Story County Dispatch, our first responding agencies, and Polk County to enhance our ability to better communicate across the county border. Through this long-term project, we hope to enhance communications interoperability through the adoption of national interoperability communications frequencies by the first responders, which will help different disciplines in different jurisdictions connect their radios during a disaster. For preparedness, we reviewed the after-action reports of Hurricane Sandy and other disasters, and they all continue to emphasize the need to be able to interact with social media during a disaster to provide people correct information and also to respond to rumors or false information. To enhance our ability to effectively utilize this information outlets, Melissa and I participated in a social media class hosted by Iowa Homeland Security. You, as jurisdictional executives, will oftentimes be called upon to interface with the public during times of crisis, and we look forward to working with Story County and other executives to help them integrate this capability into their emergency response. The deputy and I were invited to tour both the 3M and Barilla factories to help gain a better understanding of their operations and how we will respond to emergencies or disasters. These visits led to presentation by 3M on their emergency response teams to our local emergency planning committee. And this information, which was a unique way of responding to disasters and integrating first responders into that disaster response, will hopefully help better other businesses be better prepared for disasters. Safeguard Iowa, a nonprofit agency that works to help businesses and government work together to be better prepared for disasters, conducted training in our Emergency Operations Center, our EOC. And it was designed to develop business liaisons who work within county emergency operations centers to help integrate the interest of businesses into disaster response and recovery. It also allows us to reach out to businesses and grab upon their resources to help us better respond to a disaster. During this training, Matthew Conley from the 3M plant in Ames became our first Story County Safeguard Iowa liaison, and I'd like to recognize his and 3M's participation in disaster preparedness here in Story County. For exercises, winter is coming.
It's here. That's right.
And the deputy brushed off the I-35 closure plan and conducted a closure drill on October 28th to ensure all the affected agencies were aware of their duties. The drill was a success and no deficiencies were noted. Tomorrow I will be traveling to Kansas City to participate in a FEMA Region 7 exercise on foot and mouth disease. I was invited to attend by Iowa Homeland Security to provide the local emergency manager's perspective on this issue. The training has already provided us some real insight into how this would be handled within the state and nationally, and I see it as being very beneficial to our operations if something like this should occur.
You say foot and mouth disease or foot in mouth disease, because I suffer from the latter.
Well, the one is with cattle and the other one is, well, I'll let you figure that one out, sir. Coordination. One major effort by our office has been to revitalize the Coalition for Disaster Recovery, or CDR as it's called. This organization of the leadership of volunteer organizations have agreed to help out during disasters, but this group was kind of burned out after the floods of 2008 and 2010. We have been able to hire a contractor using our CCP funds to take on some of the administrative duties of this organization to allow the leadership to focus on their primary operations, but yet still come together in a very rapid manner to be able to respond to a disaster. We hope that over the next year, we'll be able to get the CDR back on its feet and make it stronger than ever.
And so, you've identified the contractor that you're going to hire there?
Yes, sir. We've got she's up and running right now, and she's getting the background data together, and we'll soon be bringing these agencies together, working on some of the administrative functions, some of the SOPs, the standard operating procedures, and how we're going to function quickly and rapidly to bring together and not duplicate efforts amongst our volunteer organizations, and also to identify gaps that might be out there and identify volunteer organizations that might be able to take up those kind of responsibilities.
One of those things you don't realize how necessary it is until you need it.
So you're looking around and figuring out that we don't have it. Yes, sir. So to recap, during this quarter, we experienced the lowest number of responses since I started. Thanks to everybody. But we stayed busy working on planning and preparedness issues to continue to help move Story County towards greater preparedness when the next disaster strikes. In the next quarter, we're going to be looking to finish up revisions of our Emergency Support Function 3, which is energy, and continue to work on ESF 6, mass care, and ESF-10, our hazmat response. As always, we'll be looking for opportunities to bring agencies together to train and exercise. I also intend on spending some time talking to the city councils of our different communities during their meetings to help inform the jurisdictional executives of their role in disaster response. So with that, I'd like to open it up to your questions at this time.
Questions for Keith?
Not really questions, Keith, but again, I know that you and Melissa had a conflict this past Thursday and Friday. I attended in Cedar Rapids the NACO Resiliency Conference, outstanding conference. I'm waiting. I thought as of yesterday they would have the PowerPoints all downloaded. They thought they would. I want to share them with you guys and again reiterate to the board just what you've been telling us all along. It's one thing to have the plans in place, but if they sit on the shelf and you don't really practice them and get all the stakeholders involved in understanding the importance of preparedness for the disasters, and since we know we live in a high-prone area with floods and top tornadoes, that preparedness is so critical. And former Supervisor Halliburton was also there in attendance. She serves on the FEMA National Board and also in Homeland Security. And we just had, it was just an excellent conference. And with Linn County experiencing what they went through, this really was an eye-opener for me to come back and see if we can't do a little bit more in terms of coordinating, particularly with our larger city, the city of Ames, and its leadership on some of the critical things that we know will take place when it comes to the coordination. For us, it's not only the county, but it's the city of Ames and the university when you look at the flooding aspect of it. And I know with your leadership and Melissa's that you will be the key person that will help us as decision makers to pull together the stakeholders. And they help reiterate for us, again, what our role was as elected leaders and how you as emergency management people, your duties and responsibilities, while you don't make policy, but you come to us and you tell us the critical things that needs to be done, and then it's up to us to be able to embrace that plan and to help move it forward. So it was a wonderful engagement as well. And with Captain Thomas here, again, we talked about incident command and the role of everybody and how at a disaster, what elected officials' responsibilities are versus the incident command people and law enforcement and so forth. So I think these are the kinds of things that we have done a good job in the past, but I think the idea of trying to pull together some time to do some actual training of some of those key personnel, because as you know, some of the leaderships have changed over the last several years. And so I will certainly pass that information on to you, and I know that we as a board will be able to count on yours and Melissa's leadership in helping us move forward in this area. So I just wanted to thank you again. David Miller was also there. He was one of the keynote speakers. Just did an excellent job, the former FEMA director and so forth, as well as you may know Ken Barris, who was one of the global leaders in crisis management, was one of the also keynote speakers. So when I get all of that information, I think you'll see that a lot of the things we have in place are very similar, but I think it'll be a good document for us to share and talk about where the gaps are.
Yes, sir. And some of the stuff that you've talked about is some of the areas that we need to move further into. As jurisdictional executives, we need to work with you and all the different communities to have you start considering things about the emergency powers you might need to be able to support the incident commanders out there. Ordinances to support evacuations, ordinances on finances and things like that that you need to put into your toolbox before the incident occurs, because at that time there won't be sufficient time to be able to provide the support to your incident commander out in the field.
Other questions for Keith? Keith, thank you very much.
Thank you.
No public hearing items today. Next item under additional items is discussion and consideration of personnel requests from the sheriff, Captain Barry Thomas. Morning.
Mark.
Morning, Board. I want to thank you guys first and foremost for taking the time to hear our proposal this morning and our request for an additional telecommunicator position at the Sheriff's Office. With me today is Commander Dina McKenna from the Telecommunications Division, and if necessary, if we start taking the ship down the wrong path, we brought our real help, our Communications Operations Manager, Nick Brezenio. So I know the board is familiar with the proposal. I know Sheriff Fitzgerald sent you guys a letter, and also that this isn't the first time that we've been in front of this board requesting this position. So I know that the history is there and that you guys have a good handle on why we're asking what we're asking for. However, I do want to just give a brief overview of our position that, in hopes it'll help you make your decision on the validity of our request. As you know, when we moved to the new Justice Center in 2002, we lost some of our telecommunications staff to the jail division in order to meet appropriate staffing levels in the newer, higher-capacity jail. To this day, we have not returned to the levels that we were afforded before our move, and it has and it will continue to negatively impact our ability to operate effectively and efficiently in the telecommunication division unless an additional position is granted. Dina and, if necessary, Nick will talk on more of some of the specific impacts on the division, but I wanted the board to know that being understaffed in the telecommunication division has created burnout among our staff, it's increased our overtime costs, and has at times, when we were forced to run with a single telecommunicator, put our ability to provide quality service to our communities at risk. We think it's important for the board and for the public to know the impact that running short-staffed has had on our office. And it's our hope that the board will consider granting us an additional person to alleviate or minimize those stresses. Unless you guys have any specific questions for me initially, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Dina for some specifics on the impact.
Thank you. I'd also like to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. Nick and I did a little research on just the last 3 years of the overtime generated within the division, and the costs may be a little bit different than what you've seen in your budget, but I want to point out just what we would be contending with if we would not have done some strategic scheduling, run some solo hours, utilized the ops manager and some other personnel within the division. But over the last 3 years, we have had between 1,500 to 2,000 hours annually that are overtime hours. That equates to between $46,000 and $66,000 a year. As I mentioned, we have not paid out all of that because we have tried to be fiscally responsible. We've tried to do what we could within the division, but we have gotten to a point where we are starting to see staff are stressed, they are burning out, they are leaving for those very reasons, and that they can't manage the 12-hour shifts any longer. I have a very senior staff, so we're encountering some new things. We've had some FMLA, we've had some situations, all of those types of things within the division cause us to have overtime within the division. When we have staff turnover, generally we do what we can to get the recruitment process in place up front, but it still takes time to train those people, and that process can take anywhere from between 4 and 6 months to do. So during that time, the majority of that time is already working. They're working overtime during that time as well, is what I'm trying to say. So I guess I'm here just to speak on behalf of staff. They've done a great job. I think if you look at the sick leave within the division, they have not abused it. Given all of the hours that they have worked, they had a very troublesome summer, and they all chipped in and stepped up to work the overtime to make sure that everybody got their time off. But we've just tried everything that we possibly can within the division, and we're just not.
Yeah, well, it looks to me like you've tried everything you can, which is exactly what I think this board asked for during the budget work sessions, and I am really, really appreciative of that. Barry, I think you hit on this as you started, but I just want to make sure I'm clear. When we had discussions during our budget talks of not filling the senior level position and keeping it going, and you guys indicated that you thought that would be a bad idea for the division. So we did fill that position, but we asked you to look at the rank and file and see if we could get by with what we had. Looks to me like, Dan, as you mentioned, 1,500 to 2,000 hours. I think we're at 1,200 hours so far this year. 1,200 hours so far paid this year. So clearly there's a overtime issue there, which leads me to believe there's a staffing issue. Barry, did I misstate any of that, or is that fairly accurate to what we talked about?
No, I think that's exactly right on point with what went on at the last budget.
Board questions?
Not so much as a question, but again, it's more of a, when you look at total staff and you look at, you know, the various divisions that you currently have, and over time you've also promoted people from within to different levels. Obviously, that's based on need as perceived at that point in time. But at what point do you look at maybe trying to reallocate some of your existing staff to fill areas where you find you're necessarily short rather than necessarily adding another FTE? Again, these are kind of management issues, obviously, and you may have already looked at that, but we don't necessarily see that as much internally because we're not there on the day-to-day internal, so we basically get the benefit of you coming before us and then looking at the various kinds of things that you've put here. And then it always comes back when I first hear these kind of requests, my first concern is do you have the necessary funds in your current budget to absorb these type another full-time FTE? So those are always a couple questions that, you know, I think that you guys do an excellent job in public safety and making sure that you have the necessary people in place to provide that service. I don't think we will ever question that. But I think I'm always concerned about looking at the total number of FTEs that you currently have now, and when we add another one, have we fully looked at could there be some other staff reorganizations that could cover this? And I just throw that out for just to further that discussion.
Oh, and I appreciate that, Wayne. And, you know, one thing with our relationship with the board, I always appreciate the fact that you guys challenge us to look at things differently, whether it be in one-on-one meetings with you guys or an open session. I appreciate that because you guys help enhance our management team. To answer your question, we have looked at those things. Currently, where we're at with things, if we have in the jail division one or two people ask for time off or call in sick, we're running at bare minimum in the jail staff right now. Same thing on patrol. Those are the two highest liability areas that we possibly have, and so that's where a majority of our staff currently lies. This discussion that we're having right now, we've talked in the past about looking at reallocating our resources, and without giving up some of our abilities to provide the public with the service they need, we just don't have the personnel necessary to do that. We would have to give up our abilities to do something right somewhere else to put this position into telecommunication. So I appreciate the challenge that you placed in front of us as a management team. It's not feasible to us. It's not worth the risk that we would open ourselves up to for liability to take from somewhere else to do this. So I appreciate that. And then also to answer your question on the absorbing of costs, if this position is granted today, we do have the budget funds available for this year that we would absorb a half year's cost for bringing a new telecommunication position on. So we absolutely would be able to do that. One of the things, this board has proven itself as being very fiscally responsible, which I appreciate very much. And I know it's hard to say yes to a new position because there's dollars that have to be allocated to make it happen. But what I would ask is for this board to take a deeper look into this situation and not just see on the surface the dollars that are going out, but the long-term impact to this county if we don't spend the monies to put this position in place. Some of the things increased overtime. We've already seen this. I mean, this is why we come to you in the last couple of years to ask for this, is because the overtime continues to increase for us. That costs us. And there would be an immediate savings, I do believe, for the board if we went to a new position because it would lessen that. The training expenditures. We've had a couple of people leave recently. One of the exit interviews said specifically the reason, and this was a tenured employee, been here a long time, the reason why she left is because she was burnt out from not being able to get her vacation because of all the overtime she was forced and asked to work, and she just couldn't take it anymore. So when we have these tenured employees leave and we bring new ones on, we have to train them up. Not only do we lose the experience, but we have to invest new dollars to train somebody up to get them to the level where the person who left was. And then the bigger picture for me is the liability for the county. When we had two people leave last year, we had to run solo in telecommunications for a while. And that, in our opinion, is just not acceptable. But trying to think outside of the box to keep fiscally things responsible, it was our only option. What happens for us as a county if we're running solo and we have two major catastrophes happening at the same time and we can't handle it? What kind of liability does the county incur if that happens? And that's part of our thought process as well as we come forward, because we know if granted another position, we can help alleviate some of those situations and some of those potential liabilities for the county.
Do you have any idea of how many overtime hours you'll be able to save with a new employee?
More than 50%.
More than 50%?
At least more than 50%.
Okay.
Board, I don't know what your picture is. I'll tell you where I am. I'm really, really appreciative that the sheriff manages his budget in a way that he can absorb the cost for the half year. He can absorb. I'm assuming that includes the training cost and the equipment cost and everything else. Not coming to us asking for more money in the FY14 budget to do this. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Then for FY15, talks that we're getting ready to start, if we were to approve this, we would need to add that in to the sheriff's budget. But one of the stipulations that I would ask for in that is that 1 year from now, so December of next year, you guys come to us and report, yeah, did this really impact overtime like we thought it was going to impact overtime? Is it helping with the morale and the burnout issues? Report to us, because then I'm going to want to take a hard look at this position and probably some others as part of that FY16 budget talk, just to see if we're on track, if in fact the board chooses to go down the path of approving this. So so that's where I'm coming down. Wayne, I don't know if you're seeing a lot different than that.
Well, no, I think the important thing here is we need to ask those tough questions, because we don't operate on a day-to-day basis like you guys do, and so that's part of our responsibility. Your responsibility, as you well laid out, is to look at the overall impact to delivering service to Story County and what potential risk could occur if we are not able to have an adequately manned law enforcement staff, whether it be in the telecommunication or, you know, in our ability to meet the needs of some of our outlying communities. And I think we have certainly gone down this path of discussion for some time. The number of hours, I think I heard you say 12-hour shifts. Is that the standard norm, or is that something mainly because of staffing that we almost have to basically do that? I imagine if they do so many days of 12 hours, they probably get 1 or 2 days off also, like you do with the other staff. But just kind of curious in terms of total number of people in telecommunication currently right now is what?
10 telecommunicators, and then Dina and Nick to make 12 in the division.
Right.
And to answer your question, Wayne, we typically run on 8-hour shifts. However, when we were in the midst of crisis, when we had just two people step aside, we were forced to go to 12-hour shifts just to cover. And we had to do it for an extended period of time. And the burnout was bad to start with. It was incredible after going through that.
Okay, good. No, I believe they have put forth a compelling argument, and I do like the idea of, again, evaluating this further, looking back again. I know in other departments in previous years, when we've had high overtime costs, where we've tried to bring that cost down, that has been a good measuring stick for us. And not only this, but I do think, again, we have the other question of this is a very stressful job. If anybody's ever been around the telecommunication, you know, and I'm not necessarily thinking about it from the television aspect, but just knowing what has to go on in that area can make a big difference. So I can certainly be supportive of the request. However, I do like the idea of the follow-up. I think that's important for us to do.
Well, Board, before we move ahead with consideration of this, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't ask our HR director, Alyssa Wigdahl, who's been involved in the evaluation of this, if she has any comments. And, Alyssa, you don't need to come up unless you have comments. All right. Thank you. If, in fact, we go down the road of approving this but ask for a report in a year as to where we are, we're going to want you heavily involved in that. Okay? Other questions, comments? All right. What's your pleasure?
I would move that we approve the additional person as outlined in their proposal.
Second. All right. Further discussion. The only thing I'd like us to consider adding to that is a request that that representatives from the sheriff's office appear before us in a year with an update on where we are in overtime, what it's doing with burnout, just before we start the FY16 budget conversation.
Yeah, good addition. I will support that add-on.
Barry, any problem with that?
No, none whatsoever.
Paul, anything additional?
No.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Passes. We'll look forward to learning more about this in a year, and we appreciate you guys' work. Thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is discussion and consideration of radio tower replacement at the administration building, the amount of $50,110. Cal Pearson.
Good morning.
Hey.
Cal, I'm not a huge fan of this conversation, man.
I understand. Since I took the position of director of facilities, I've had some concerns of the integrity of these towers for a long time. Paul, I think you're probably the oldest person I know of seniority, and I don't think we have any recollection.
I want you to qualify that.
How long those towers have been there. There's been no maintenance on these in all the years that I've been here. In fact, 23 years ago today, I walked in the door here as an employee of Story County, and we've never had anything done on those. So November of this year, I had Murphy Tower do a safety inspection on these towers, and I was ready for some major repairs, but unfortunately, the inspection report came back worse than I expected, and their recommendation was to condemn these towers and put new towers up.
Well, didn't you have one of the inspectors who refused to climb it?
They had, when the inspectors came that day, they looked at the towers and looked at me and said, we need to call the office because we don't want to climb the towers.
Yes.
So that was a concern.
Pretty good indicator right there.
Yes. So I asked Clyde to give us a budgetary number on taking down the towers and putting new ones up. And I also spoke to him late yesterday afternoon about another option that is my recommendation, is that we hire an architect engineering firm to do a study on these towers and the use of the radio systems. It seems to be a mystery, you know, who all uses equipment up there, and I'd like to get a handle on this, and if there's any other possible options. You know, the electronics world has grown in leaps and bounds in the last 30 years for communications, and I think it would be worth looking into that.
Cal, could you comment a little bit? How is it different, the usage now? You know, at one time we had the Sheriff's Department and everything right here in this building, and now that they're out at the Justice Center, as far as what do these towers actually do for Story County Administration and in coordination with our other off-site place, such as the Justice Center?
Well, I don't know if I'm the right person to answer that question. I've asked the departments that have interest in the towers, such as Dina, McKenna, and Keith, and myself, and Barb.
The towers provide a backup connection to the Sheriff's Department, the Justice Center, and in fact, it wasn't too long ago we did use it and weren't aware that we were operating on it, so it's still efficient. It still does what it needs to do. And any future configuration we do, we just have to make sure that we still connect to this building because that's where the data center is located.
Talk, Barb, while you're here, talk just a minute about conservation. In your last report, you talked about how we were looking at the possibility of a microwave connection.
Yes.
With conservation, and that was a $20,000 bill if we could utilize this tower.
Correct.
And I think you said it was a $250,000 bill if we had to run fiber out to conservation.
Yes.
Or something. Can you talk about that for just a second?
Well, the reason the fiber option would be so expensive is because it has to go through 8 miles of developed area in Ames. We do have another vendor who's currently, he's surveyed the site, and he's working on another proposal for us. It's always nice to get more than one opinion. So we're hoping that'll come in at a little less. We do have several options with conservation. We can either go from the HSC building or from this building. So we've got a couple different microwave towers if that's the route we go. I guess it all depends on what we decide to do here.
Sounds to me like the right first step is to ascertain, do we need the tower? And if we need the tower, what's it going to cost us to get it fixed? I mean, clearly we've got a quote here to what it costs to get us fixed. But it seems to me figuring out if we need it, Keith Morgan was just up reporting to us that they're looking at all kinds of communication issues. Dean, I would assume that it's a really nice redundancy for you to have that access. So I think we're going to dig in and find that, you know, it's been out of sight, out of mind for years, but it's something we need. But I think that's the appropriate place to start.
I think if we have some options to look at, I mean, there's a lot more towers around now than when these two were first put up. And I think it was sometime in the early 80s when the county switched from a low-band radio system to a high-band radio system, which really sounds antiquated. But it was sometime in the very early 80s that they did that. And that's probably when I think at least one of them went up. I think there might have been one of them there already, because this was where the sheriff's office was located, and everybody was dispatched out of this building. So, but I think it would behoove us to look and see if there's any other options. I mean, there's got to be tower spaces available, and it may not be a good option at all. It may be better off that we've got our own tower. So.
And so do we, Cal, have a cost? You said your recommendation was that we hire somebody to study it. Do we have a cost on what that would do to us?
Clyde said that approximately $3,000 for Shide Hattery to do a study like this, give or take. Once they were on site, they would be able to give us a firm quote on what the study would cost. But he said somewhere around $3,000. Is what I have right now.
Okay, and any issue, if the board were to so choose, with having you go ahead and make that contact, get somebody, Shive Hattery, here to look at it and give us an estimate and scope of work?
Yeah, I can do that.
Are they the only firm, basically, that I know we've had previous working agreements with them, but are they the only agency probably that we would want to contact in this regard, or are there others that we might want to take a look at on a cost comparison?
Well, when I started all this, I asked Electronic Engineering for some reputable contractors. They gave me three names. Clyde was in Des Moines. He's the closest, and he says these people specialize in this type of work, so I was just following his recommendation that we use the
good information.
Architect engineers.
Okay, good information.
Board, what's your pleasure?
No, I believe that this would probably be a good $3,000 well spent for us to be able to determine the feasibility of whether we still need to maintain this at the current level, or are there other towers that we could piggyback on. I certainly agree with Barb that we do need the redundancy. We do need to have that backup capabilities. The communication world that we live in today, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about how important it is. Anytime you have one data center go down, you've got to be able to have some others that you can rely on. So I think this will give us the necessary information to make a reasonable decision. And if so, if we determine that we need to go ahead and replace these, we will have that information.
Yeah, Cal, I think the direction you're getting is, as facility director, contact who you need to contact to bring the board the information that we need in order to determine the future of those towers. If you can absorb the cost in your budget to do something like that, do it. If not, come see us and let us know what needs to happen. Does that work for the board as direction? I don't think we need any action on that item. Okay? Any questions? Anything else you need from us?
No.
Okay.
Thanks, Cal.
Thanks, Cal.
Okay. You bet.
Next item is discussion and consideration of extending the project completion date for environmental health scanning project, and we have Matt Corey with us today.
Good
I'm Matt.
Well, in January during the budget, Margaret had requested roughly $19,760 for this project for the extra help. And that was taken down to $7,600 with the caveat to explore the position later in the year to see what the progress was, because there wasn't any real way to get a definite number of months or hours that this project was going to take. And now that we're a year into this project, Tim started just before Christmas last year. So he's worked 1,858 hours of scanning, done roughly 50,000 pages. We have 20 drawers of files, and he's completed 13 and a half drawers in that time, which averages out to about 1.1 drawers a month. Estimate about 4 to 6 months for completion, and that's a rough estimate just because of the difficulty of the scanning, because it's just not all 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper. Some of them are 36-inch maps that have to be cut down to be able to be scanned. There's post-it notes with pertinent information on them, pieces of sandpaper that was the only thing that when Don was out in the field to write on, and instead of copying it over, it just gets put in. So
kind of rough on the equipment, isn't it?
So what Margaret is requesting is $18,000. That includes the $7,600 originally that was allocated for.
So an additional $11,000,
yeah,
roughly.
$10,370.
And this is approximately how many months you're anticipating?
Four to six months. Which, yeah, basically, I think by these numbers, it takes the remainder of the fiscal year.
We had this discussion last Tuesday at the Board of Health. And
right.
It's one of these things that I think initially there were some concerns about the health care changes, and that's why the budget was reduced. We initially wanted him to be done by the end of this year.
Right. We were concerned about number of hours in a calendar year, I think. Is that right? Alyssa, can you come up? Because I remember vaguely that
right.
conversation.
And I think that regulation has been pushed back at least a year. So
at least.
So I don't
yeah,
think
the initial regulation stated that we would have to count the hours in 2013, and effective January 1st of 2014, anybody that averaged over 30 hours a week, we would have to provide health insurance benefits. The employer mandate has been pushed back. It's not effective until January 1st, 2015 right now.
Okay.
So any hours that the temporary employee would work from January 1st of 2014, we would start counting those hours. So this next calendar year, we do have to start monitoring our part-time and temporary employees.
So 1,500 hours is kind of the magic number.
1,560 would be right at 30 hours a week. So we just need to make sure over that 12-month period that if the employees work more than 1,560 hours, then effective January 1st of 2015, no matter how many hours that employee works, they get the insurance benefit. They don't have to, you know, be full-time or three-quarter time. It's just, it's called a look-back period. So that was our concern, and we did kind of scale down all of our part-time and kind of made sure that our temporaries were working temporary hours, like, instead of full-time hours. So
okay. I think this is a good example of I think maybe the next time before we start a project like this, we really look into it. I mean, and this isn't any critique of Margaret's department or Tim, but their files are arranged by township. So it's not like you can look at a scanning project that where the files are arranged by date and say, okay, we're going to go back 5 years, scan everything forward, everything before 5 years is going to get put in a box and in storage. So here we are with you know, 13 out of 20 file drawers that are arranged by township done. So if this project ends at the end of this year, that's it. I mean, it's
right.
Two-thirds done.
Yeah.
The scanner that they're using is leased through IT. If it's going to sit idle, the sheriff's office is going to come over and grab it because they want to start on the same project over there. So.
Well, but it doesn't make sense to me to have a scanning project halfway done
exactly.
and just stop.
Yep.
But I am concerned about the 1,560 hours, and it's something, Matt, that we would have to keep a close eye on with any temporary position we have. Second question is the $10,370. How is Environmental Health's budget running right now?
I don't know that she's got the capacity for the full amount. I had a brief conversation with her last week about a couple other items budget-related. She's got some money in there from this septic project that never really – I mean, she didn't get any takers for anybody that wanted the
okay.
– and I'm not sure how much that is, what that amount was. But
not exactly sure either. But like you said, it's – If it's not completed, it was money wasted, really.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to have it partway done, especially, Paul, as you describe it, where we're not going back to a date certain. We're doing this township by township, so there's going to be certain townships that are done and others that would be left undone.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And we've done the best that we can going through purging files,
sure.
Getting rid of stuff that
getting rid of all the little sandpaper scraps.
Right. And Tim is absolutely wonderful at what he does.
My experience with Tim, and this is not about any individual employee, it's about running things the way the county needs to run them and being aware of the rules and regulation that are coming down from the federal government and making sure that we maintain what we've got to maintain with that.
But if we were to pause this program and then have to hire somebody else, there is such a learning curve. I mean, Tim can look at a piece of paper and tell you exactly what setting that piece of paper needs to be scanned at to get the best resolutions, file size, and everything. So even like if we were to take this project over ourselves, we would sit there, you know, if we dedicate 2 hours a day for each of us to scan, we're going to be sitting there longer trying to figure out how to do it. And Paul even, you know, he volunteered to come in on Saturday and Sunday and scan too, didn't you? And that was said at the Board of Health?
Something.
I can almost hear it. I am heavily inclined to go ahead and approve continuing this project through the end of the fiscal year, which I think gets us to where you guys need to go, with the caveats that we watch all our temporary employees' hours closely and make sure that nobody approaches that 1,560 magic number. And the second caveat would be I don't want to approve any additional dollars at this point for health. I want to monitor their budget as we get into the spring and then see where we are and what can be absorbed within it. So I don't know if you guys are anywhere close to that or if you have some different ideas.
No, it's just consistent with past practice when you look at the request to see where the additional funds may need to be. I think it was probably anticipated that this may be something that we may not be able to completely fulfill within the time frame when he came on board. But I do think that, as Alyssa has alluded to, we do have some other factors out there as far as the number of hours that has to be monitored. So I certainly would be supportive of us moving forward at this point in time.
I think, yeah, I mean, it all comes back to if we don't get it done, it's not going to get done, and then it's money that we've wasted up to this point. So,
Paul, would you be able to, as the contact person for the Board of Health, would you be able to work with Margaret and Matt to take a look at where they are in terms of actual budgetary dollars, and so that we could at least anticipate, you know, where the gaps may need to be over the next 4 to 6 months if it goes that long? Okay.
As Chair of the Board of Health, I want to make the motion extending project completion date.
I would make the motion that we extend the project scanning project for Environmental Health to not go past the end of the fiscal year this year.
Okay, and I will second the motion.
Motion and a second. Part of that motion, Paul, you'll work no added dollars at this point, but you'll work with Margaret to make sure we get where we need to go, and we're going to watch closely the 1,560 hours. Further discussion?
Nope.
Toot? Aye. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Matt, thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Next item is discussion consideration of FY15 general fund and lost fund allocations to the asset process. Deb Shildroth.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Morning.
Good. How are all of you? We have reached that point in the fiscal year 15 budget process of taking a look at the requests that have come through asset. I have provided that information to you in the agenda packet, and we primarily look at allocation amounts for general basic and local option. And if you take a look at the sheet that looks like this, that has the comparisons on it for the amounts, you'll see that there is a significant decrease in the mental health and developmental disabilities asking. And that is primarily related to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act.
Yep.
Although that starts in January, we are expecting to see implications of that throughout next fiscal year, primarily in the areas of inpatient mental health services and outpatient mental health services. And Ireley Ball, being one of the agencies that goes through the asset process, and there are Community Mental Health Center, had decreases in the majority of their requests for their services, with the anticipation that the clients that had been receiving county funding for those services will now be picked up through some type of insurance coverage for those services. So we will carefully watch that. It is a transition, as we all have heard and read about. So it will go throughout the course of time to get folks enrolled and covered under those other sources. Just a couple of things under the general basic requests. We do have we have two new agencies into the asset process. Visiting Nurse Services out of Des Moines is new, and they're going to be providing the foster grandparent program for covering Story County. The other agency that's new in the asset process is Raising Readers, which they have been around Story County for quite some time, and they're just entering in the process. So Raising Readers' request is a brand-new request coming through the general fund. A couple of other new services in the process. One would be transitional housing, and that's offered through Emergency Residence Project. They've been providing that service for a number of years, but it's new to the asking of asset. Under Heartland Senior Services, they are going to be asking for dollars for the senior food program, and this goes back to a request that came before the Board of Supervisors, I think it was last spring, out of Polk County, about food packages for seniors. And we felt through the asset administrative team that this was something appropriate for Heartland to take a look at. So that's where that request is coming from. A new request for the county through Heartland Senior Services is the adult daycare program. They're requesting $34,000. They are serving a number of individuals outside of the city of Ames area, so that's a request that's bumping the general fund dollars up as well. But those would be the highlighted items that are contributing to that increase in ask from the general fund. Local option, the majority of that request is coming through legal aid. They have done a really good job of tracking the individuals that they're serving in the unincorporated areas, and the current fiscal year is the first fiscal year that they are using local option dollars, but they are seeing a growing need in that area. So that's what's contributing to that increase. Are there any questions or comments at this
Help
point?
Help me through the – so 77,000 $77,000 increase in our general fund is the request.
Right.
Now, this is something that will go forward to the asset volunteers, and it means doesn't mean we will necessarily get to that 77. It means that you guys will be going through, taking a look at all the requests, and making your recommendations from there.
Correct.
Talk to me a little about how the mental health dollars are going to flow through asset this year. Do we have clarification on how it's going to go to the region, then back to asset? Where is the approval for those mental health dollars? Where is that going to rest?
At this point in time, we are following those dollars will flow through the asset process like they have in previous years.
So it still rests with this board?
Yes. Okay. Yep. And then we will look at what adjustments the regional board wants to do beginning July 1st for fiscal year 16 moving forward. But in talking with our administrative team at the regional level, because of the way the asset process is set up, they didn't see there being any point in disrupting that at this point in time. So they said to go ahead with the regular process and have that included in their budget then. The regional board will be looking too at whether or not the budgets will be merged going forward after fiscal year 15. Again, we're kind of still in that transition. That seems to be the buzzword these days, but we're holding status quo at this point in time.
What action are you looking for from the board today? Clearly, we're not approving anything. What?
Just we're at a point of formulating an idea for the asset volunteers on what the dollar figure would be to work within for the general fund dollars and the local option dollars. So when we get to our process in January with the work sessions, they have a parameter that they know they can work within in allocating the funds.
Okay, and my current sense, go ahead.
I was going to say, is it fair to say that, you know, the number of dollars that we've allocated for a number of years have remained somewhat fairly constant with a give or take of a few areas, because some agencies didn't necessarily draw down all of their funds. But when you look at the fact that we've got several requests, you've got two new ones coming on board, and then consideration for another program or two, you know, it would appear that the dollar increase certainly would be factored in based upon the fact that we don't have the status quo. We do have an expansion of services, and if the asset team has determined that these are going to be essential and worthy projects for our Story County residents, then I think we need to realize that probably that increase in the allocation amount is understandable.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in looking back at previous years, the increase has been anywhere from like a 2 to 3%. And the information you have before you is just to give you that snapshot of where we're at, what's been requested, and that difference, just so you have an idea of what those agencies
and
are.
The one that concerns me on here is the $77,000 increase from the general fund. I'm not convinced. Until we dig into it, I'm not convinced that we're going to have the capability to increase general fund dollars by that amount. I'm really comfortable with the asset team going ahead and starting with these as the numbers, as long as there's recognition up front that getting a 16% increase in general fund dollars may be a steep hill to climb. That's what I see at this point. The others, you know, lost, I think we can probably find a way to get that done. The public health dollars, the mental health is kind of a crapshoot to me right now. I'd ask you to leave here understanding that the general fund dollars, we may not be able to go that much this year.
Do you want them to then work within that same amount as fiscal year 14 then, just as a starting point?
I just assume them deal with the requests as they see it, and then as they come back with their initial assessment of those requests, let's see where it is. By then, the board's going to have a really, really good feel of where we are. I'm not opposed if the asset team finds that these are needed services and they recommend that we increase general fund spending by $77,000 and we have the general funds to increase by $77,000, I'd be all for that. I'm just not convinced the dollars are going to be there.
Well, what you're saying is that we may have to look elsewhere. The need may be there. The question would be is, would we have to make some other decisions someplace else if we determine that these are programs that are vital to be moved forward? I think normally taking the 3% a normal allowable growth, and then if you factor in, you know, the addition of these new services, I'm not sure exactly what that total percentage would be, but I think it gives you some parameters to begin with, and we will work very closely with you as we move through the budgeting process and we may have a little bit better answer a little later than what we have right now in terms of where we will be in terms of the total general fund expenditures.
Well, yeah. My expectation, and Deb, just help me if I'm seeing this wrong, my expectation is that as the asset team works their way through, the maximum that they could come up with in the general fund would be this $77,189. The reality is they're going to come up with something less than that.
Right.
And then what I would ask the asset team to do then, and maybe it's as easy as breaking out the new services or whatever it is, say if the Board of Supervisors, if the county is not able to fund this additional new request from general fund, then these are the areas that we would suggest you not fund. And like Wayne says, I think we're going to have a fairly clear feel here sooner rather than later of whether there's going to be these kind of dollars available in the general fund. I just don't have it today.
And keep in mind too, the other thing that gets applied when the volunteers are working on the allocations are the county's priorities, funding priorities.
Right.
So those serve as guidelines too when the volunteers are working on this.
Do you have enough information from us to go forward?
I think so.
And do we need formal action on this, or is this just for our information and now you go work with the asset team?
Yeah, I can go work with the asset team. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
I'll give them, you know, some general parameters, and then what typically happens is after we've went through the allocations process, that information comes back to the board. I share it with Lisa Markley, and it gets looked at as part of the total budget.
Other questions for Deb?
Yep.
Do you have enough from us?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion consideration of HSC access and space allocation for Central Iowa Recovery IPR services.
We have an IPR, intensive psych rehab, practitioner hired in Story County. Her name is Serena Madden. And she is in training. She started training last week, and she's in training this week. And part of the entering into that 28E agreement with Central Iowa Recovery was that the county would assist with finding space for the practitioner and the work that they need to do. We have available space in the community services office, and I've talked with Cal Pearson about what the square footage costs could be so that we can communicate that back to Central Iowa Recovery. And after going through the process that the board has with the Department of Human Services space, Cal said the $12.50 per square foot is the amount that we could use. So I will, if the board is okay with that, that will be what I communicate back to Central Iowa Recovery for space that's used not only in community services, but if there's space that Serena needs to use in other areas of the Human Services Center, that same amount would then apply.
Yeah, I would suggest we use the same formula that we've just worked through in working with DHS and just convey that on to Central Iowa Recovery. Are you talking about her utilizing one of the offices in your area?
Yeah, I'm probably looking. We've got an extra cubicle, and I think that's where we might start out with because most of her work is going to be done outside of the office.
Yep.
We don't have the most conducive space for her to do the group work that needs to be done with the clients, at least at this point in time. So I've talked to NAMI, and they said their wellness center, they have a conference room there that can be used in the mornings because the wellness center doesn't open up until the afternoon. So
good.
I've been in communication with Deb Niehoff about that, and they would determine their charge then for that particular.
Okay. And how is our, when we finally get our new space finished up there where your vial system used to be upstairs, will that be something that will
definitely. Yep. I talked to Cal about that, and that's, you know, a few months down the road, of course, before it can be utilized, but is definitely something we could take a look at as well.
Okay.
Have you factored in IT usage and computers and all of that yet?
Well, yes, and the Central Iowa Recovery provides the practitioners with the computers and with the cell phone. I do need to have the conversation yet with IT about whether or not she will be able to hop on the network or will have to use our wireless access. So that's a conversation that still needs to take place. The other piece to this is access to the Human Services Center. Do we want to have her use just a regular fob, or do we want her to have an ID badge in with the fob in it? in talking with Terry Loneman in facilities, she can fashion an ID badge that doesn't necessarily indicate that she'd be a county employee, but it would have her picture on it and be able to identify her, and that might be, you know, what dovetails then with the rest of the county trying to go that route and have that kind of a system in place.
Yep, that would be my preference, I think. All right, so then can we have a motion approving utilizing the same same structure as we have with DHS in terms of cost allocation for office space?
So move.
Second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Deb, we'll just count on you to work with Terry on getting the appropriate badge and access. And then if there's anything we need to do in terms of IT, with our IT, those costs I just want to go back to Central Iowa Recovery if there are any.
Right. So, right.
Thanks.
Right.
Discussion consideration of reallocation of asset funds in the amount of $1,377.
This request is for the current fiscal year. At the end of fiscal year 13, we had been notified that the Mid-Iowa Foster Grandparent Program was not going to continue beyond June 30th of 2013, and the federal grant that helped support the program was up in the air as well. Visiting Nurse Association, they're based out of Des Moines, found out that the grant did become available again. They applied, and they are serving the same counties that Mid-Iowa Foster Grandparent Program did, Boone, Dallas, Marshall, and Story. So they can start providing the service now. We kept those dollars aside, that $1,377, just in case there was another need with one of the other agencies, or now that the program has resurfaced. So my recommendation is that we allocate those dollars to Visiting Nurse so they can provide that service this fiscal year. They have turned in an application to be an asset agency for fiscal year 15, and we will be looking at their budget then to provide these services going forward.
Okay. I would move the reallocation of the asset funds of $1,377 to Visiting Nurses Services for the program as outlined.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It is reallocated. Thanks. Discussion and consideration of Resolution 1455, CIRHA appointment for Deb Shildroth.
Right. We're back to CIRHA. A couple of weeks ago, we had the discussion of appointing me as an alternate member to their executive board, and as we were getting those arrangements up and running with CIRHA, they brought to our attention and helped us better understand, I think, their governance structure, that they have a what's called a board of commissioners. So that's a board that just meets annually. And then the executive board is the entity that meets every month and does the actual work. So the resolution and other two documents were sent to us from CIRHA, and they're asking for a formal appointment to someone to serve on that board of commissioners.
Questions? Okay.
Once a year. My concern basically is that we, as we've done for other boards and commissions, that we do have a designated alternate that would be empowered to be able to vote on issues in the event that one wasn't there. I know when they say just one person, there's a few areas that we have just one person, such as like Mid-Iowa Community Action and things of this nature. But I would hope that the governance board of this group would allow the supervisors to at least name an alternate that could act in their place.
Yeah, and if you look at the resolution, it's about paragraph 4, it does say, and this, it was described to me as this could be an option, it's not necessarily a requirement, but that a representative and alternate could be appointed. So that, again, is your discretion.
Paul, do you want to take this or you want me to take it?
Well, this is something that gets reappointed every year.
It's a three-year
term. Three-year, okay.
But we can change the alternate.
We can change the alternate.
Yeah, I would suggest the board consider that Deb is our correct representative, mm-hmm, to assign, and then let's just make it the vice chair of
of our group right here that would serve as the alternate and pick that up anytime Deb was not able to go. So that would be Paul at this point, and then we'll see where we are in January.
I have no problem with that.
All right. If you don't have a problem, make that motion. Right.
Okay. I would move that we appoint the vice chair to serve as a member of the Board of Commissioners for Sherha as outlined.
Would be the alternate.
Deb is still going to be. Oh, so this is actually the executive board. They also want other members.
Yep, there are two boards. There's the Board of Commissioners, which that's what we're dealing with here,
right.
And then the executive board is what we dealt with previously.
Yep. Okay. All right. So, great. Okay.
So all right. So we have a motion to adopt Resolution 1455, naming Deb Shildroth as our representative and Paul Toot as our alternate.
Yeah.
Second that? Did you second that?
Well, I haven't yet. Do you want to list me specifically, or do you want to list the board chair?
I want to list you specifically, and then we come back and we deal with it again on our organization meeting.
Okay, I'll second that then.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1455, naming Deb and Paul, passes.
When do they meet?
They typically meet at the Sherha office in Grimes. There are no meetings in December, so when I get the schedule for 2014, I will be sure to share that with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
Deb. Discussion consideration of 2014 calendar year planning and development work program, Leanne Harder.
Hey, congratulations, Leanne. I saw that we made the magazine for ISAC. Wonderful article. And I'm still a little upset with you that you didn't want to take credit for that, but it was well done.
What you have before you is our next calendar year work program. Just as a reminder, we do this on a calendar year rather than a fiscal year. Why it's before you today is so that we could not only be ready at when January 2014 begins, but also build what we need to into our fiscal year 15 budget, as we have those discussions underway starting in January. I did give you a copy of this beforehand on the agenda, so I can just quickly, it's segmented in three different sections, as was this current fiscal year's. The first ones are items that have been identified by the board through some sort of action, whether it be a study that's been completed, where you see the references to the CPAT report, or directions from board and various other means, or through the hazard mitigation plan. Then continuation of existing projects and the new projects that have been started or thought of by staff. Just those identified by the board. The first two, the CRS application, that's Community Rating System, another arm of the National Flood Insurance Program, and Building Code Study. Those are two that were identified in the hazard mitigation, the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan that the board did approve.
Okay, and stop there on building code study. So the board identified this as something we need to study, but made no commitment at all that it was right. Anything we were going to enact.
Yep,
okay.
It's just a study of if we were to go to a building code, what would be the ins and outs of doing that program, and just a basic study 101 on what that would entail. Coordinated long-range plan and agreement, that's from the CPAT report, looking at what elements of a long-range plan or comprehensive plan we may need to have in place. The county development plan was adopted in 2003. We're definitely due for a review. And I did build into my budget request funding to have a consultant brought on board to do that. Economic development audit of county policies and plans. That's, again, from the CPAT report. This is something that we would start next fiscal year. In July, so we did ask for some funding for that as well. And an industrial commercial land inventory report, inventory, again, from CPAT report. Then the last one is a code of ordinances review. One is to look at our bed and breakfast regulations and accessory structures. This is in response to an email sent from Michelle Kassebaum to the board, asking you to have us look at this. And then not only accessory structures, but accessory buildings. We've had a number of issues over the past few years on timing and location of accessory buildings on parcels when there's not a house there. The definition of accessory is it has to be ancillary to something for it to be accessory, and staff would look at that and the timing of those types of structures. And then the last one is shadow flicker. The Planning and Zoning Commission did ask the board to direct staff to look at this issue. It's a phenomenon that's associated with wind turbines and the rotation of them in relation to the horizon of the sunset and sunrise. When we initially wrote the regulations 8-odd years ago, it wasn't yet studied enough like the noise had been. Studies have been completed, and I think there's enough information that staff can look at whether or not there are applicable regulations that can be brought forward in relation to that. Any question on any of those? And comment, did I leave anything out? Okay, going on to continuation of existing projects. These are ones in our current work program that, for whatever means, need to continue forth into next year, whether they were identified as ongoing or like with the first one, downtown facade pilot program. We just haven't had enough time yet this calendar year to finalize it, but the basic bones of it. We'd start that in January and then have that finalized in April. The community vision plan, we've had some beginning discussions on that, but we would start that in January and take that on through May. The zoning map audit, we've really done the bones of it with the combination of the C and the light industrial districts, but now we want to take that the next step and make sure we have the appropriate zoning on the appropriate lands, and that's part of actually the industrial and commercial land inventory. They go hand in hand. And the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is ongoing. That will continue. Connect Iowa, E911 Addressing, Squaw Creek Watershed Management Planning, are all ones that we've started that will continue on and be finaled out in 2014. Planning services to communities, what we'd like to do is follow up. We're toying with the idea of maybe just doing one more pilot program, just one more city next year, and rather than assigning a planner, assigning the department to that. So we can use the strengths of the department in different ways and just choose one city. But that's something we'll look at once January comes, how we formulate that program. And then, of course, annual report, which we'll get to you in February. Any questions on continuing projects? And then, quite simply, just three new projects identified by staff. One is a request from the Planning and Zoning Commission. They'd like to see quarterly training. So we have a schedule set up that will do that, but we do want to have that on our work program so that the board is comfortable with us having staff time and resources dedicated to ensuring that that does come to fruition. We'd like to look at our fee schedules and make sure we're in line with our staff time needed to process different types of applications. And then also kind of along those same lines, look at our fines and then the types of inspections we do and the timing and process that we go forward with that. Any new projects?
I have two questions. Okay. One, local foods. I don't see anything on here about local foods. What happened with
local foods?
Foods,
what we're it's not being put on a work program because we're going to, in essence, try to work with Iowa State Extension. They received Prairie Rivers of Iowa, and Paul, you may need to help me if I get the numbers wrong on this, but Prairie Rivers and Iowa State Extension received a Wellmark Foundation grant, a very sizable grant for two or three years, to bring a local foods coordinator on for Hamilton, Hardin, and Story. Hamilton, Boone, and Story. I think it's a three county. What we're going to do, I think they extended an offer yesterday or will be extending an offer to the individual they'll bring on. We're going to work hand in hand with them to take the board's strategic plan and have them hand over what we've done thus far to them, have almost a third party come in and help guide the process.
But will you still have more of a collaborative rather than a leading role, but will you and the department still have a role in making sure, and should that be listed here?
Yeah,
would
we
be
could.
My question.
Yeah. And that would be a continuing existing project.
That'd be a continuation, but I'd like to see it reflect on here, even though your role in that might have changed. And the second one is, getting out and visiting with some of our smaller communities who I think by and large are really appreciative of a lot of the things we've done in economic development, but also in you guys' work in the planning. The critique that keeps coming back again and again is, we didn't know about XYZ. We didn't hear about this. And so it leads me to, we need to look as a board at more structured communication with our smaller communities. And Leanne, I'm not sure that it rests with you. I just don't know who it rests with. And so I wanted to bring it up here to see if it's, even if it's just an analysis of improving and structuring communication with the smaller communities, maybe we could get that on there for you guys to at least look at what we should be doing. I don't know if you guys feel differently.
I hadn't picked up anything, so no, but it sounds good. Like a good thought.
Anything else, board?
Not at this point.
No, I don't.
Yeah, other duties as directed.
This is kind of like the 5-year plan for the engineer's office. It's always subject to change.
Looks good right now.
So actually next week is my department report. I'll give you a snapshot, kind of a preview of the annual report that's to come, but where we are on our successes for this year on the 2013 work program. I think it, not to give too much away, but I think we had a really good year. We had a lot of success.
Good.
So is this, are we asked to basically support the outline of the 2014 calendar?
It's consideration of.
Yeah.
Consideration, so, but add local foods
and local
communication.
Foods and okay.
So, and communication, yep.
And communication, okay.
So is that a motion?
Yes.
I'll second that motion.
All right, motion to approve the calendar year planning and development work program with the addition of local foods and a communications study piece. Further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Leanne, thanks. Look forward to the report next week. Let's see. No departmental reports, liaison assignments, and committee meeting updates. Paul, let's start with you today.
Believe it or not, I do have a couple. Last Tuesday, I attended a seminar in Des Moines at the annual Farm Bureau meeting at the invitation of our local Farm Bureau members here. Seminar on drainage issues. And It was interesting. There's some good keynote speakers, but what it all boils down to is when they start to refer to the drainage laws that were passed at the turn of the last century as modern drainage legislation, I threw my hands up and said, I wasted $7 to park here today. But there was a lot of discussion on EPA regulations that could possibly affect the way farmers handle drainage, and there's a lot of concerns in that area, but that was all well worthwhile, but the actual drainage discussion left a little bit to be desired. And then I think it was that evening, Tuesday evening, I attended the McCallsburg City Council. At their request, they had some questions and concerns about contract law enforcement with the sheriff's office. I had to remind them that I was not the sheriff, and that's probably who they had to have that needed to have that discussion with. But I think they needed somebody to kind of talk them through some of their concerns, and I did that and referred them back to the sheriff if they have some concerns on the contract. And that's it.
Thanks, Paul. Wayne?
No liaison assignments, but I would want to report mainly for the board's benefit and Leanne's. At last week's ISAC Board of Directors meeting, I attended my first session as orientation since I will be officially sworn in January. But they did, Bill Peterson brought up the discussion regarding a meeting that you and Supervisor Sanders had with him to the ISAC Board of Directors, and they did vote affirmatively to move forward with at least a $2,000 appropriation of funds to assist the second phase of that proposal. And I felt very good that they recognized the outstanding work that had already been done through the grant proposal that was put in place. But they did have some concerns about stepping out into this particular area and not realizing that other counties may be coming forth with similar requests and whether there would be additional funding for it. But I wanted you to know that I was extremely honored that the director certainly saw value in what Story County had already put in place and were willing to actually recommend to the ISAC Board of Directors that they fund it at that level. So you'll hear more about that at a later time.
And, Board, you'll hear more about it as we get into budget conversation, but that's something Leanne and I will keep working on as a possibility for Story County. Wayne, it's outstanding to know that ISAC would be willing to participate, much like they did in the goal-setting side of things that we did. None from me. That takes us to public forum number two, comments from the public. On items not on today's agenda, Board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anyone wishing to address the Board? Seeing no one, moving to the microphone, announcements from the supervisor. Paul, back to you.
Pass.
Wayne?
I would be remiss if I didn't take the moment to reflect my personal thoughts regarding the death of Nelson Mandela. As you all know, today the world is honoring his legacy and life accomplishments. Our president, I heard this morning, spoke eloquently about his background and life story. I think that he has certainly been an inspiration for leaders all over the world. And I wanted to just take a moment. As a former social studies teacher, I had spent a lot of time during his struggle to eliminate apartheid, to fully understand what was happening in South Africa, and then to see him ascend to the presidents of that country. I think this was a very fitting tribute to an outstanding man. So I just certainly wanted to acknowledge that today.
Thank you, Wayne. That seems like an appropriate place for us to end today. So if there's a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.